Welcome back to the Alex Jones Live Show. You can follow it at alexjoneslive.com and at Real Alex Jones X and Alex Jones Live on Rumble. The for this last 5 minute part where I'm here before we cut to the break and the other guest host come in, the key factor to look at in the Iran war is what's likely to happen. So the what the president knew and what he admitted several weeks ago is that we're continuing to sanction Iran is counterproductive for U.S. interest. Continuing to hold on to Iranian assets, some of which we've been holding on to for over 50 years, is counterproductive to U.S. interest. That continuing a blockade on the Strait of Hormuz only means that many of the necessary, not only oil and gas, including natural gas, and including sweet crude, and including sour crude and heavy crude, but also a range of other petrochemicals and helium and fertilizers like urea and the like, things like sulfur that are essential in the high-tech economy and other aspects of our supply chain, that the continuing to keep the blockade only allowed Iran to continue to blockade its other product, non-Iranian products out of the strait. And that was getting to the point where we would be on the verge based on, he said, 4 weeks ago, about 3 weeks ago, he said in 4 weeks we would fall off the cliff in terms of the global economy. And yet here we are, apparently going back to that all over again. The president appears to have convinced himself that a coercive technique would work with Iran when it hasn't worked with Iran, hasn't worked with Russia, hasn't worked with China. Indeed, if there's three great civilizations, it is counterproductive to employ primarily and principally coercive tools against. It is the Russian bear, the Chinese panda, and the Persian tiger. And unfortunately, Trump has taken the bait to do all three. Economic coercion he attempted against China. They used their rare earth monopoly to get him to capitulate. Tried to use the threat of various kinds of attacks deep into Russia, including on its refineries and other aspects. Russia is now saying they will escalate their attacks on Ukraine and are considering even attacks on Europe. That and Iran will do the same. We apparently, if we hit their infrastructure, they will hit the infrastructure of the Gulf and Israel. If we hit their water desalination plants, they will hit the water desalination plants of the Gulf countries in Israel, which are far more dependent on them, that could trigger a massive refugee crisis into Europe and around the world. That if we take out oil and gas and petrochemical infrastructure from Iran, they will do the same throughout the Gulf Coast, Gulf countries, and to Israel. That could trigger an economic disaster for more than a decade, because that's how long it may take to get those gas and oil and other petrochemical development infrastructure back online to full capacity. So the president has been trapped. The Israel lobby is whispering in his ear, telling him it's Iran that's out to kill him. When if anybody, it's not Iran that delivered a golden pager to the president in their very first visit in the Oval Office of his second term. That would be Bibi Netanyahu. The lie that Iran is out to assassinate the president of the United States is hogwash and garbage. And everybody inside the CIA and the DNI and in the Pentagon knows it. And yet the president is being suckered and sapped back into the same trap, the escalation trap that Professor Pape has repeatedly warned about for more than two decades, which is you cannot use coercive tools to get what you want out of Iran. You can use, as Vice President Vance was pointing out, the release of sanctions, the release of funds, the economic engagement, economic investment as the carrot to bring Iran back to a more de-escalatory relationship with the United States, Israel, and the Gulf countries. But you're not going to get them there when they're screaming for revenge and waving the Shia red flag of revenge during the most attended funeral in in world history. Over 45 million people in Iran and Iraq attended and honored and recognized the death of the former supreme leader and were screaming and chanting in every single street, revenge, revenge, revenge. Now was not the time to double down on coercive conduct and coercive conflict. Unfortunately, it's the one the president's path is pursuing. And what that means is disaster coming up for the midterms and massive economic risk. Let us hope, let us pray that Vice President Vance can step in and restore some degree of sanity to the president's decision-making as it relates to Iran, or the whole world faces deep, great global depression risk, and the United States faces a massive midterm revolutionary election that could knock the president himself out of office by June of this year, time in 2027. We'll be back after the break. Remember to continue to tune in and share the links to alexjoneslive.com, the Real Alex Jones on X, and to
introducing the AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter Showerhead. You're not just drinking tap water. You're showering in it, breathing the steam, and soaking your skin in it every day. When you take a hot shower, that hot water opens your pores and creates steam. That means chlorine, lead, and many other contaminants in your tap water can hit your skin, your hair, and the air you breathe inside your own bathroom. And unlike most shower filters on the market, this has independent third-party testing. SGS testing showed a 95%+ lead reduction using the system, over 99% chlorine removal, and many other chemicals. The system installs directly onto a standard shower head. It literally just takes seconds. No plumber, no tools, no modification to your plumbing. Regularly $139. Today you can get it for just $97.99. That's 30% off. VIP members of TheAlexShipStore.com get it for as low as $69.99. That is beyond a steal. Secure yours now while supplies last at TheAlexShipStore.com.
We are here with Mr. and Mrs. Tack from Oregon. Mrs. Tack is the winner of the Alex Jones Store Bay Truck Giveaway. It's a brand new Ford Raptor and $10,000 in cash. How do you feel?
Amazed.
Yeah? Is it real?
Yes.
It's, no.
If Alex says it's real, it is real, and you guys are part of him.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
This has been an answer to prayer. That's what I want to say.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So
you got a long drive back, don't you?
Just to Tyler first.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to hang out there with family for a while.
Yeah.
And we get to drive there in this amazing truck.
Yeah,
it'd be a good road show. Yeah,
that's live, so exciting. Right. TheAlexJonesStore.com, 2 days left to get in this Dodge Charger.
Tell the camera what you bought to get in her.
The CMOS gummies and the turmeric,
yep.
The gummies, I love those.
At the Alex Jones Store?
At the Alex Jones Store.
All right.
I just donated.
You're a subscriber too?
Yeah.
All right. You know,
the last 2 days she received resubs.
That's amazing.
Two subs.
So, and all subscribers too, I don't know if you know this, get double entries to win all the giveaways.
Oh.
So you get two times the entries on all the giveaways.
See, and you know, I wasn't entering.
Yeah.
I was using the product.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just a good little perk.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited for y'all.
Doing man's work here. Fighting for the species as our forebears did. Building. Competing. Striving. Trailblazing. The maverick spirit is alive and well. Reality starts here. Victory starts here. Tyranny dies here. Freedom grows here. You have the power in your hands right now before we cover all this incredible game-changing over-the-horizon information. To share the live feeds now at rumble.com/ The Alex Jones Show Live, the coordinates of victory, and Real Alex Jones on X at AJN Live, and more. AlexJonesLive.com, our news site with the feeds, video, audio, article, special reports, government documents, think tank reports, and more.
AlexJonesLive.com, because there is a war on for your mind.
Program leftists failed to silence. It's the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome to the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. What an amazing week. Alex's insane viral debate with Sneaky Sneeko. I'm glad that it came to that because I've been on Sneeko's channel doing debates before as well. We had a famous debate with Muslim Lantern, who has kind of gone into obscurity since the debate that I had with Muslim Lantern on Sneeko's channel, where Sneeko was the moderator. And now Alex, I think, has helped to hopefully retire the insane trend floating, trend wave riding, flip-flopping of the character Sneeko. But it also ties into Joe Rogan's interview with Rupert Lowe, the British politician, who highlighted the Fabian socialists, which you've heard me talking about for so many years. I've been highlighting and bringing attention to this because it's so important to understand the actual ideology of the global elites, whether it's the Rothschild, Milner, Fabian circles, or whether it's the Democratic Socialist Party, the Democratic Socialists of America, this ideology that's gaining so much momentum in terms of leftism. And what exactly is that relationship to Marxism? Is it classical Marxism? Is it something different? We're going to find out again as we rehearse the classic story of the Fabians today. And again, it's very crucial because Keir Starmer was a Fabian socialist. You go back in the last several decades of British politicians, the Labour Party, that was rebranded socialism. Fabian socialists became the Labour Party to hide what their real strategy was because Marxism socialism became very unpopular. So they really took over the left, so to speak. But it's Marxism that's reformed. It's Marxism blended with monopoly capital. This is really the best way to understand the ideology that's operant in the world. It sort of transcends the, for example, left Islamic ideology versus the Zionist ideology or something like that, because both of those ideologies have above them an overriding socialism known as Fabian socialism. Now, if you go back to the 1800s, Karl Marx, of course, was a socialist, a Marxist, obviously the founder of Marxism. But Marxism itself, in terms of an ideology of communism, is not begin with Marx. It goes back to earlier, prior to him, with the French Revolution. You had the Jacobins that were Marxist before Marx. They were communists. They had the same ideology, for example, as Adam Weishaupt, who was a communist. And we've seen in many writings of Sutton, the writings of Carol Quigley, we've seen it in the Rothschild's biography that we just covered last Friday, that a lot of these elite money power oligarchical families prefer Marxism because it allows them to have a centralization of the wealth of a nation to overthrow the existing power structure and to transfer that wealth offshore while they control everybody from a top-down technocratic ideology. Now, Sneeko ties into this because Sneeko is a useful dupe, and a lot of Islam is a useful dupe kind of ideology. It's a chess piece on the chessboard, like Zbigniew Brzezinski talks about with the grand chessboard. And so Marxism has this tool capability within it to be used, much like Islam. And so the Red-Green Alliance, the tying together of Islamic ideology with leftist socialist ideology, has been a very potent force. But it's not actually that antithetical to Zionism, even though you might think it is. The founders of utopian socialism themselves, it's not actually Karl Marx. Modern utopian socialism comes from Moses Hess, the famous rabbi, very influenced by Spinoza and his pantheism to create what would become the Zionist ideology. In fact, he was writing about Zionism way before anyone knew about this as a political ideology. In the 1860s, Moses Hess, in his book Roman Jerusalem, wrote extensively about how he had already been talking to the Rothschilds, particularly Edmund de Rothschild, and that they were looking towards creating a new state, a new power block, you could say, perhaps, in the Middle East when the Rothschilds would eventually purchase large swaths of land from the Turkish Sultan. That would eventually become the modern nation state of Israel, although it would take many years before it would get recognized post-World War II. If you go to my channel, we had a lot of fun last night reviewing and commenting on Alex's debate with Sneeko. But it's important to realize that Sneeko, when he's out there at the soccer match cheering on the victory of Islam in New York and saying Mamdani is right part of this victory. Mamdani's out here marching with trannies, right? And then he's over here pushing Islam. And then Sneeko's tying into that. Well, none of these things are actually antithetical because if you go back to the 1890s, there was a new society created. The ideas were already there, but it wasn't really formalized as a unit until the early 1900s in terms of this society. They're not a secret society, so they operated more in the open. And the idea was to reform Marxism in the ways that it was very deficient. So Marxism, for example, had the idea as in terms of its classical position from Marx, that the proletariat would rise up and then the working class would overthrow their capitalist oppressors and take over the means of production in the factories and whatnot. But it turned out that the workers were more concerned with wages and lunch break. They weren't that concerned with the nuances and the niche crazy terminology of the schisms within Marxist intellectuals. And so they never got the workers to rise up. So what they realized was that we're going to need a different approach, right? They had tried terrorism, even back to the Paris Commune, red terror in the Paris Commune. Lenin and Trotsky relied on terror. But this didn't seem to really kick off the world revolution that a lot of these believers thought would take the world by storm. you had Mao using terror. You had a lot of people using terror, but they decided that they needed a different strategy. And so you have some of these ideologues, namely people like Beatrice and Sidney Webb, Lord Rothschild himself, at least certain sectors of the family. You had some members of the Royal Society, people like Bertrand Russell, H.G. Wells, very famous member of the Fabian Society, probably the chief propagandist of this whole ideology, George Bernard Shaw, people like that. And many, many books have actually been written on this history, but they're not, it's not well known. There's the Rose Martin book, but better than all of these books is the book that we've highlighted many, many times, Johann Rathjew's book, because he understands it from the perspective of how controlled dialectics play into this, controlling both sides of conflicts from an academic perspective. It's not actually a conspiracy book. It's more like something like A Tragedy and Hope. But he also understands the Zionist angle as well. He understands the goal of the United Nations, as the second half of the book covers, is actually to put forth this sort of replacement demographic warfare program. The Kalergi plan is essentially what it is. But we have to understand that Marxism underwent several revolutions and phases within itself to come to the point where they would actually unite with big capital. This is so crucial. This is so key to understand the ideology of the World Economic Forum, of Davos. For example, one of my friends, Conrad over at World War Now, he put up a picture the other day on Twitter, got a lot of views, of Klaus, and Klaus Schwab has a bust of Vladimir Lenin behind him. Why would this big capitalist have the bust of Vladimir Lenin behind him? Why would David Rockefeller in the late 70s write a couple New York Times editorials? The most famous one is From a China Traveler, where he lauds and praises Mao Zedong. Why would they do this? Why would capitalists, mega capitalists, have such an infatuation, such a fascination with Marxism, socialism? In fact, David Rockefeller says that Mao's experiment in China was a wonderful success, and he thinks it should be a model that's used everywhere. Wait a minute, I thought he was a huge private property capitalist guy. No, when you get to a certain level of monopoly capital, what happens is you are above the ideas of petty nation state squabbles. We saw that in the model that the Rothschilds pioneered back in the 1800s. They figured out that you can move money and attain power through conflict, and that was much more important than this or that side of a European conflict. And that's how they, in part, built up such a massive imperial structure in terms of a banking empire. But to go back to the Fabians, they said, look, Marxism is not working the way that we thought. We're going to need the engine of money. We're going to need these big power players. So rather than trying to kill and overthrow the capitalist oppressors, perhaps we should convert them to our side. We need to have a long march through the institutions. And they believed exclusively in scientific government. So basically, they're scientific technocrats. They're all, by the way, eugenicists. And if you look up the history of the Fabian Society, this is something that they wanted to really convince Marxists, who maybe in other countries, perhaps in Russia, places like that, they weren't always on board with eugenics, because eugenics was essentially associated with the British Empire. It was associated with Malthus. It was associated with, you know, eventually later on, Tiny Mustache Man. But what about the idea of a socialist international technocracy that also blended itself with social Darwinism and eugenics, and the idea of dysgenics? And they also had a unique idea to create an inner party, the inner party of the Fabian Society elite, that would include these very wealthy financiers. According to Rathjew, this initially included the Rothschilds, Lord Milner, and the people in those circles of Cecil Rhodes. Now, I'm not saying that necessarily Cecil Rhodes was a Fabian socialist, but the circles that were associated with, for example, Rhodes being a front for the Rothschilds in terms of De Beers and other diamond interests down in South Africa, the Fabian socialists said, no, Marx missed some of these ideas, thinking that the workers would rise up. We need a scientific priest class that would rule, not the workers taking over the means of production. So they favored scientific governance model, a managerial top-down managerial structure, ruled by experts. They would all be rationalists and members of different scientific societies, namely, for example, the Royal Society. And so they decided that when there was a lot of not a lot of popularity for socialism after a lot of death and destruction, they rebranded as the Labour Party in the UK. Now, the Fabian Socialists are not just the Labour Party. As I'm pointing out, Fabian Socialist ideology is everywhere, whether people know about the Fabian Society or not. And so I'm thrilled to see Rupert Lowe going on Joe Rogan, highlighting this ideology, because this really is the operating overall ideology of what we call the globalists in the 20th century. It's not antithetical to, well, you're not talking about the Zionists. How come you're not talking about the Zionists? It's the same ideology. Lord Rothschild, who ends up being the patron ultimately of the founding of the nation state of Israel, namely Edmund de Rothschild, those same circles, as Rothschild shows, were the ones promoting and funding initially the Fabian Socialists. And this is everybody from Madame Blavatsky to John Maynard Keynes. Now, Keynes himself was not a member of the Fabian Society. However, he was a Skittles PDF economist that becomes the main economist of the entire 20th century. The post-World War II Bretton Woods system is the implementation of Keynesian economic theory pretty much throughout the Western world and much of the world. That is a fiat-based currency, a debt-based strategy for monetary policy, ever-expanding printing of the money supply. It's a strategy of economics based on war. If you want, there's a great book on this, which is mainly about the history of monetary policy by Saifedean Ammous. It's called The Bitcoin Standard. The first half of the book is actually just Austrian economic analysis of monetary policy and critiquing Keynesianism. But Keynes is, quote, the official economist of the Fabian Socialist. So you understand, it's not really capitalism. It's not 100% Marxism. It's, again, this blended synthesis third way approach. And they realized that they needed more than just economic theory. They also needed culture theory. They needed ways to approach culture. They needed ways to approach all of society to reform it. And they needed to have a better strategy of using religion. So it's not going to be just convincing workers or handing out pamphlets or getting rich people to fund other, socialist tea parties or something like that. I don't mean tea party, like socialite tea parties. No, they need to recruit the elite of society, get them into running this leftism. And it can be united with various other ideologies as chess pieces as well. For example, in 1910, 1920, the early Fabian Socialists in the UK explicitly said, we will bring Islam into the UK. This will be a test tube to see how we can destroy the existing remnants of Christian society. They actually said this. You have to understand, Bertrand Russell, Beatrice Sidney Webb, these people, George Bernard Shaw, they absolutely despised Christianity. So they were looking for ways that they could bring it down, but they knew they weren't able to do it just on their own. But if they could bring in massive amounts of other people, particularly with Islam, they might be able to revolutionize and change the entire English nation. And again, they think they have a right to do this because they believe that everything that existed before is oppression. They saw it, quote, as their social justice mandate. Did you know the term social justice actually comes from not just Marxists and socialists and Lenin, but particularly from the Fabian Socialists? The Fabian Socialists were not antithetical to the Bolsheviks. In fact, Beatrice and Sidney Webb, others, they had numerous correspondences and letters with Krupskaya, V.I. Lenin's wife, and they were adamant supporters of the Bolshevik Revolution. So they realized that we got to infiltrate from within. We got to bring it down from within. And this is why the right wing is so ineffective for the last perhaps century and actually really accomplishing anything, is because they're almost always fighting against a faulty, phony opponent. They will never identify subversive from within. The right has somehow become so stupid and so naive as to think that anybody who says one principle or one point that agrees with, quote, conservatism, well, they must be on our side. We must go with them. But as Rod Tew notes, throughout the history of the Fabian Socialists, their whole strategy was also to create false conservative opposition. So they would have people that were in league with them running as fake Tory, you know, conservative type opponents. And thus, they were able to consistently gain ground long term. Remember what we saw with the Rothschilds biography. They were successful, not because of just using banking and usury or whatever, but also because they had long term generational thinking. And the Fabian Socialists, even though they were crazy, wicked socialists, at least understood that it would take a long time to implement this. That's why they have as one of their symbols the tortoise, because it's a slow kill, gradual model. And this goes back to the Roman general Fabian. This is where they took their ideology to take not just an immediate approach like Marx had, that the workers would just immediately rise up and overthrow, but rather to go for a gradual strategy. Marxism also fell out of favor, and so they realized they would have to kind of rebrand. They couldn't just call themselves followers of Marx or whatever. So they chose, you know, much more innocuous names, the Labor Party. We're the party of the workers. And again, we have to highlight that a lot of people don't realize that Karl Marx himself was not anti-capital. People think that Marxism is just about overthrowing capitalism. This is one of the major misconceptions about Marxism, at least classical Marxism. In fact, the Fabians themselves could cite Marx and say, look, Marx didn't hate capitalism like people think. Marx thought that it was oppressive, but Marx thought that history had these determined phases. They weren't determined in the sense that they had to come about, but at least that whatever was going on with determinism in terms of material dialectics, right? History is just dialectical materialism or historical materialism, whichever branch of Marxism you choose. So it has a determined future. We don't know what that future is, but Marx thought you could study the past and you could see the cycles of determined phases and perhaps project possible determined futures. So in other words, history and the future is determined by dialectical materialism, but we don't know exactly what's going to happen in the future. We don't have that power. So if we look to the past and we saw, as Marx argued, that the feudal system collapsed and gave rise to capitalism and Homo economicus, economic man. The economic phase is when you get Ricardo, laissez-faire, John Locke, Adam Smith. They gave rise to a new phase of economic man. And as we saw in the Rothschilds biography, the Rothschilds themselves exemplified that capitalist model destroying the feudal model. They were the new lords of the new coming era of being ruled by banks, being ruled by international finance. And so Marx said, that's still oppressive, but it's not wrong or bad in itself. Nothing's wrong or bad in itself. It's just a phase. And Marx thought capitalism was better than feudalism, and there's no way that we could ever go back in time. We can't go back to feudalism per se, but we can hope for a future where we evolve to the next phase, which Marx thought would be big state communism, right? So, for example, Mao or Stalin, Marx kind of thought that would be the next phase. Marx believed that after that phase, there would be the libertarian phase. This is what blows everybody's mind. People don't know that people lose their mind when I say this, that Marx was actually a libertarian. Marx thought that technology would eventually give rise to the alleviation of the workers. And after the big state communist powers fell, then we would have the phase of libertarianism.
A microscopic tag be implanted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix. Graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here, is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Colin saying 21 years ago that, oh, yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha, 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 wonder who put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting the you know, base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health, what it's done is absolutely insane. Get masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite. And once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatically when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from Austin, Texas, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back to the fourth hour of The Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. I want to remind you guys that if you go to my X account, you will see various posters for upcoming debates. I will be debating at DebateCon in Dallas coming up in a couple weeks, July 25 and 26. And you can get tickets there at the links. If you see I'll be debating a couple Muslims at that. And then we have future debates coming up. And I want to remind everybody that my big interview with Tucker Carlson will be out Monday. Big, big, big interview. We went on for over 2 hours about everything. We went from Satanism to Hollywood to transhumanism to Christianity, you name it. It's all going to be dropping Monday. So look for that big Tucker Carlson interview. I was very honored to be up there. Had a great conversation. Spent the whole day with Tucker. It was awesome. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. So be sure and check that out. When it comes out, be sure and share it, clip it, et cetera. Now, we're talking about the institutions that have the ideology then of Fabian socialism, because after they began to import various Islamic teachers at Oxford, Eton, et cetera, Cambridge in the 1910s, 20s, and 30s, they initially just brought in Muslims who were Sufi. And for those that don't know, Sufi Islam is much more mystical, very influenced by almost copy and pasted version of Neoplatonism. And that allows it to be a lot more ecumenist and syncretist. And, oh, yeah, we kind of like all these different religions and they're all kind of amenable. And so, but that prepared the way for the eventual bringing in many decades later of all of the Sunni, Salafi, Wahhabi kind of radical Muslims, the Orthodox Muslims. And so there was a strategy even behind that where when they brought in certain academics to teach in the 1910s and 20s in Oxford's Middle Eastern department, Arab studies, we were just having one professor and, oh, he's just going to set up one little Islamic study society. Don't worry about it. No big deal. Don't be racist. Now we have basically the Islamification of London. But why? Why is it Sadiq Khan? Why is it all the Muslims in London and in the UK? Because the Fabian socialist elites of the 1910s, 20s, and 30s explicitly said, we can wipe out the white Christian majority in the West only through using Islam. It's really the only tool that they had when they realized that the workers wouldn't rise up. And they could change society and create this internationalism through bringing in a Islamic horde. And then that would completely change the demographics. So this is not against the Kalergi plan. It's the exact same plan as Kalergi, as the Fabian socialists themselves said. In other words, Bertrand Russell, George Bernard Shaw, they explicitly all said this. They said, if we're going to have a future world based around, at that time, what they said was the League of Nations. Did you know the League of Nations' whole ideology was Fabian socialism? Woodrow Wilson. Fabian socialists. We've had Fabian socialist presidents in the United States of America. And Woodrow Wilson was handled, as is pretty much admitted by most historians now, by Colonel Edwin Mandel House, working at the behest of the Rothschilds. So the League of Nations, United Nations, which was the Empire Strikes Back version of the League of Nations because it failed, those all were Fabian socialist institutions. In fact, the EU in 1931 had already begun to implement this strategy of Fabian socialism. But again, this is not located only in the UK. This is not located only in the ideology of the European Union. People like Jean Monnet, other figures who were very important in the EU, but also the heads of British intelligence, the beginning of MI5 and MI6, were Fabian socialists. In fact, the heads of the OSS and CIA, very early on, Keynesian and Fabian socialist members or believers. And if you don't know, David Rockefeller's own thesis advisor, I think when he was doing his master's work, was from the Austrian Economic School. But then he also had another thesis advisor named Harold Lasky, who was America's most famous Fabian socialist professor. In fact, Harold Lasky would travel the entire country throughout those decades, preaching and teaching the gospel of Fabian socialism. And so it's actually globo-capitalism, monopoly capitalism, that will build the order and the infrastructure that the Fabian socialists would take over. This is their explicit plan. They note, for example, that this was some of their early 1910s and 20s strategies. We would remove territorial boundaries for Britain and other European nations. They would eventually erode these, allowing them to more easily transition into a global version of the EU and the United Nations. All ethnic tradition and boundaries would be eroded through state-imposed mass immigration. This is from the 20s and 30s. Okay, this is a long-term plan. This wasn't something that was cooked up by leftists 5 years ago or two. It's not AOC and Joe Biden that cooked all this up. Cultural boundaries would also be eroded through the weaponization of the term multiculturalism. Religious boundaries would be eroded through syncretism, ecumenism, and multi-religionism, they called it back then. They would need the policy and the power and strategy of the power of the monopoly capitalists to actually do the work Then Islamicization would come in and change the people groups so that it could transition down the road into a socialist technocracy. Notice, in the 10s and 20s, this book is so important. I don't even know if it's out of print or if you can still get it. I mean, there's an entire chapter on using Islam in the 1910s, 20s, and 30s for where we are now. They were 100 years ahead of everybody else in planning this stuff. Now, I mentioned as well that, oh, well, this is just some British political thing. Who cares what a bunch of British political operatives are up to? No, you don't understand. The organizations that were all set up that run the world or the Western world, the Atlantis' power block. When I say Atlantis' power block, that doesn't mean not Israel. Obviously, Israel is part of that. It just means the way that international relations describes power blocks in the world. That's all it is. You had, for example, the erection of multiple international institutions that would promote all of these systems. And these are the systems pioneered by Lord Rothschild, Lord Milner, Lord Curtis, Bertrand Russell, H.G. Wells. All of these are essentially the Fabian Socialist institutions. So I'll list some of these. You may have heard of these. The Royal Institute for International Affairs. Their governing ideology is Fabian Socialist. The League of Nations. The International Labor Organization. The International World Court, set up in 1920. The famous figures out of the UK like Lionel Curtis, Arnold Toynbee, people like John Maynard Keynes are all using Fabian ideology. So it doesn't really matter if you're a member of the society. That doesn't matter. It's just if you have the ideology, that's the main point. The Council on Foreign Relations, 1921, set up with Rockefeller money, has as its ideology Fabian socialism. The Socialist Christian League in the 1930s. The World Bank, set up in 1944, set up by Fabian socialist ideology. The World Parliament Association, which eventually you get the United Nations in 1945. The International Monetary Fund, Keynesian Fabian socialist economics. The World Council of Churches, set up by Rockefeller money. The Aspen Institute. So again, biggest think tanks, all of these NGOs, think tanks, foundations, not all of them, but many of them have this governing basic ideology. And to be an actual member of the inner party is a different thing, right? And if you don't know, when George Orwell, who wrote, obviously, Eric Blair wrote 1984, the organization that he's fighting or that he thinks he's fighting is INGSOC, right? Everybody's seen INGSOC. That's English socialism, INGSOC. What do you think he's talking about? He's talking about the Fabians because he was amongst these people. He's talking about Bertrand Russell, H.G. Wells. He's talking about George Bernard Shaw. He's talking about Beatrice and Sidney Webb. He's talking about Lord Rothschild. Those are the members that are the inner party people, you see. If you remember, in 1984, there's an outer party of all these people that think that they're working for the greater good. There's an inner party elite, a very small number of people who are actually aware and self-aware of what they're actually up to create a global technocratic socialist order. Rottu notes, for example, on page 103, George Orwell, who wrote 1984, was written with the Fabian Society's 100th anniversary in mind. This was one of the few works by an ex-Fabian that actually criticized their form of socialism, or INGSOC, English socialism. Although this book was intended as a, quote, satirical work, Orwell's book betrays an intimate knowledge of their movement, its leadership, their techniques, methods, and aims, and it accurately and uncannily predicted a future Fabian-controlled New World Order. That's what 1984 is about. It's about this. It's about Keir Starmer, Sadiq Khan, Blair, all those people. But it's not just them. It's David Rockefeller. It's Lord Rothschild. And it doesn't matter if they're capitalists. They see these things as ideological tools and technologies of control. And so, yeah, sometimes they'll fund a right-wing group. Sometimes they'll fund an Islamic terrorist group. Doesn't matter, because the overall plan is much greater than some ideology. But it's These people, as Rupert Lowe has noted, and as he said to Joe Rogan, these are the people that pioneered 100 plus years ago the idea of radically changing Europe and the UK and also the West with Islam. And that's not antithetical to Jewish or Zionist interests, because as we've seen from Netanyahu, he doesn't care if all of the Palestinian Hamas people come to the US. Many rabbis have said Islam is the broom of Judaism. So they see it as something akin to a kind of Noahide position, right? It's not exactly the Noahide position. It doesn't mean that they like Islam. It doesn't mean that they're believers in Islam. It just means that they providentially see it as aiding ultimately the ascendancy of a Jerusalem, Tel Aviv-based world order. In fact, Moses Hess even says that about Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, so Jerusalem mainly being the future center of world power, he says. So they have an idea of a Jerusalem-centric new world order. Not every technocrat believes that or cares about that. I don't think Zbigniew Brzezinski cared about a Jerusalem-based new world order, but he certainly believed, like the Fabian Socialist, in a future technocratic social order. Another one of the key figures here is the Bilderberg Group. This was created by Fabian Socialists Joseph Redinger, Hugh Gatzkell, and Dennis Healy, together in collaboration with the Rockefeller family. That's explicitly in the Rockefeller's biography and David Rockefeller's memoirs. He has a whole chapter on his role in helping to prop up and create Bilderberg. He wasn't the only one. There was also former SS, you know, Prince Bernhard was a key player in that. So that shows you that at that level, right, you can be above Nazi or Zionist ideology. You can be supra-international at that level of high-tier finance. That's why the British Empire, for example, had no problem, or the West, or should say Western CIA, et cetera, they had no problem utilizing Otto Skorzeny and Reinhard Galen to train the Mossad. And that's all on record. That's all in Israeli papers. Again, at that level, things are above these localized microcosm ideologies that people are debating. Until we understand that what's at root here in terms of the battle in the West is not these stupid political parties of left and right. That's all part of the dialectic, right? I know most of this audience knows that the two-party duopoly is fake and gay, but I'm saying it's not even American two-party duopoly. It's the same structure in Canada. It's the same structure in the English Commonwealth nations that are all run by Fabian Socialism. So Mamdani is the perfect example of exactly what you see with Sadiq Khan in London. Mamdani is that same model in New York, and dummies like Sneeko think that they're actually part of some real crusade for, you know, human rights through promoting Islam, which is itself retarded. No, it's actually management by experts and technocrats, many layers and levels above people like Sneeko, right? Think about Hassan Piker, same situation, leftist, socialist, you know, oh yeah, Islam's great. All these things are great. Bring all these people in. That'll help destroy America. The battle's not with America. The battle's not with white Christians. The battle is with these technocrats. And that's not antithetical to Zionist interests, because Zionism is itself a socialist movement. It's one of the flavors of Marxism socialism. All of the Fabians were pro-dysgenics, not just eugenics of finding a good mate to pair with to have good offspring, but dysgenics, particularly getting rid of Western white Christians. George Bernard Shaw said, we must create a mongrelized public and get rid of the white Christian population. That is the only way that we would de-Christianize the West. He says that explicitly. So this is the ultimate atheist Islamic or leftist Islamic alliance. Muslims, they're not that typically perceptive or intelligent. They don't realize that they're being used as a puzzle, as a chess piece on the chessboard. But all of these people, whether it was Annie Besant of United Nations fame, the stupid witch, right, or Bertrand Russell, they all said Islam could be a great tool to help us spread Fabian socialism. Now, again, this is kind of stupid, but they believe that they could actually convert Islam to a form of socialism. I don't think they will succeed in that, but that's was their original mindset. They said, maybe we could take the idea of Muhammad and sort of craft him into a social justice. I mean, as crazy as it sounds, this is actually the way they thought about it. But whether or not that would be successful in terms of using Muhammad as a figure of socialism, it didn't matter because they were successful in basically bringing down the UK by starting with implementing and importing Islamic scholars who would teach at Oxford and other places, Sufism, and then that eventually turns into the importation of mass amounts of radical Sunnis. And you might have heard of groups like Antifa, which is anti-fascist. Well, it turns out the original Antifa were actually Fabian socialists, all the way up until the Third Way that was championed by Ed Miliband, David Miliband, others, and Tony Blair. So this is back in the 1990s, right? Blair thought that he could run on this platform of social justice. Okay, so even in the 1990s, they were promoting social justice, and that's the modern origin. I mean, it goes back to Lenin and a long time ago, but the modern origin of when you hear social justice warriors and these people that think that their job is to destroy Western civilization to create a fair order. No. That's actually coming from the 1990s era of the Fabian socialists and people like Tony Blair. So again, institutions like the Federal Reserve, the ideology behind the Federal Reserve is Woodrow Wilson. It is Keynesian economics. It is fiat-based currency. And that League of Nations model that H.G. Wells was so adamant in promoting, even though the League of Nations failed, and even though the United Nations doesn't really have a whole lot of power behind it, those are the models that they want to bring for the future technocracy. So perhaps the League of Nations fades away and we get some other version. Maybe we get the League of Jerusalem order, right? Something like that. That could be what they push for in the next 20, 30, 40 years. It could be. But again, it's this super state international model that will be run by tech is this plan. For example, Zbigniew Brzezinski, when he wrote in his 1970, I think in the 72 book, Between Two Ages, I have it over here. Brzezinski's Between Two Ages predicted a future where everybody was run by Skynet, where technocracy invades every area of your life. And we just seen this week, they're talking about the flock cameras that basically surveil everything, can be tapped into, watch you at all times. Everybody's new cars have all the microphones and the cameras all through them. This is literally what Orwell was warning about in 1984. But it's not just the Orwell, you know, sort of heavy-handed top-down model. It's also the Brave New World model. Because guess what? Aldous Huxley is also in these same circles. In fact, Julian Huxley wrote The Philosophy of UNESCO, the official dogma of the United Nations. And he said, all that stuff that Tiny Mustache Man talked about, we got to rebrand all that. And we Fabian socialists will rebrand that as biometrics and technocracy. So don't get caught up in, oh, I follow, you know, neo-pagan Tiny Mustache Man because he arrested one of the Rothschilds. Yeah, but the same interest funded his rise, JP Morgan, et cetera. The Bank for National Settlements was originally the Reichsbank, and that becomes essentially an international clearinghouse for all the same banking families. Bill Clinton, for example, represented the American version of the Third Way. That's Fabian socialist economic theory. So this is not a UK thing. This is all of Western society's most powerful institutions have this as their governing ideology. This is the governing ideology of the Council on Foreign Relations, of Bilderberg, and of Trilateral. Who was on the Trilateral Steering Committee? Jeffrey Epstein, recruited into that by David Rockefeller to be his legate, his attaché. Was he also, who else was he the legate and attaché for? The Rothschilds. He says in multiple emails and letters, right? Or texts, I should say. He says to Peter Thiel, you do recognize I represent the Rothschilds. He says to Ariana de Rothschild, we know we can move the money when there's a crisis and let the dumb goy have the bags. They'll be holding the bags. That's the exact same thing the Rothschilds were doing in the 1800s, as we saw from the biography. So when we understand that all the top think tanks that we think of as, you know, having all this power, Chatham House, Brookings Institute, Trilateral, Aspen Institute, Atlantic Council, these are all operating on a certain type of ideology. And even the academics that are recruited into this, do you think academics and people that get PhDs even in international relations, they don't read Carol Quigley? When I checked out from my university, when I was in grad school, I checked out Tragedy and Hope from my university. You know how many times it had been checked out since it was in the library since the 1970s? Once. You know who the second person to check it out was? Your boy right here. Nobody checked that book out. Nobody reads these things because academia is controlled to funnel you up a compartmentalized structure. So nobody in academia is going to be reading this kind of a book. Okay. And this is a very academic scholarly text. It's a critical text, meaning that it's critical of the establishment and its ideology. But what I'm trying to tell you is that the information that you're getting from myself and these books, which are this whole giant shelf back here behind me, the whole thing is almost all elite books, their own books. I mean, some of these are conspiracy talks, but this is literally just all, I'd say 90% of this shelf is their stuff. This one too, by the way. Do you think that people in international relations and grad school are reading all of these? They might be reading a couple of these. They're not reading Brzezinski and Toffler and Kissinger and Rockefeller and Jacques Attali and H.G. Wells. They're not reading all this stuff. And the CIA guys, Miles Copeland, et cetera. They're not reading Moses Hess. They're not reading the Rothschilds biographies. They're focusing on niche areas. And then when they get up to a certain level, when you get recruited into Jeffrey Epstein level stuff, that's when you start to have a knowledge of the things that we're talking about. That's why it's not conspiracy theory. All the stuff that we talked about in these fourth hours from these elite texts over the last 6 years is literally all the stuff that Epstein was talking about in his emails and text messages. He's talking about to Larry Summers explaining him how the Vatican Bank works. Well, we've been covering the Vatican Bank for 10 years. If we're covering Vatican spies right now. I've got like 5 books on the Vatican Bank. We've been covering those forever. And you got Jeffrey Epstein explaining, no, Larry, it's a secret bank. Bankers run the world. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer. Be sure and follow me on all my socials. And go to the Alex Jones store and buy those products. Alex Jones Network, Alex Jones Store. Get in there, get those products, support the InfoWar. This is crucial to save Western civilization.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you, Meta, Facebook is watching you, Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.